Welcome to Musically and Technically Speaking, a podcast where music and technology intersect, hosted by Brenda Minch and Carol Broves. Today's podcast is all about starting small, taking baby steps. All right, so for this episode, Carol and I are going to talk about taking small steps in integrating technology into your music program, because both of us at this point in our careers, I would say, probably are what you would call power users in our
Yeah, we are.
We don't like to say that, but when you talk to other music teachers and find out what they're doing, and then they hear what we're doing, and they tend to get this look of fear on their face, wouldn't you say, Carol?
Oh, major fear. They just, oh. You know, and I have to explain to them that, you know, I've been doing this for 5-7 years. I mean,
right. So tell us a little bit about what your first year of beginning to integrate music technology into your, or I don't even want to talk about going back for us, maybe integrating some of this collaboration kind of business into your curriculum.
I think the secret is baby steps. So I know that's funny. It comes right out of that, you know, movie. But, you know, start really small and, you know, don't think big, think small. And I mean, I always think big in terms of like what you want to get, but think small if you want to, if you're doing a project, because, you know, whatever it is, it's going to take longer.
Right.
You think it's going to be 2 days?
It's going to be four.
Maybe four. and then there's a tech problem and all, everything goes out, and then there's a fire drill, and then there's 3 kids that are sick, and, you know, so you think small. And I think, you know, that's the real secret in all of this. You know, just not having, and letting the project sort of grow. So you have room for growth if you have to. And never start anything like 3 weeks left of something. You know, you have 3 weeks left, oh, I think I'll start something new. That's not
the... Or, okay, you know what, if you're going to start 3 weeks left, then whatever project you're going to do, you better be okay with that it's not going to get done. That you're going to learn, like, maybe how to navigate some of the programming or some of the ins and outs of working with the kids and the groups, but you're not going to get it done, and it's not going to be perfect, and it's not going to be polished, and that's okay.
Right.
Sandbox time.
And I think, yes, and I think, you know, I always, the first day I ever show a new program or something, it's the play day, and the kids know that, you know. I show them how it works, and then they can just play with it. You know, we don't have to save, we don't have to do anything, no expectations, and they feel comfortable then sort of playing with the program, sort of figuring out how things work. And they can sort of see other kids will jump out of their chairs to show someone else something. And so it's sort of a learning time that we all see before we begin something.
Right. And for the teachers who are not into tech, I relate that time to, you know, how when, well, I do anyway, I don't know how you run in your classroom, but when we, the first time we get out the boom whackers or the xylophones, the first thing any kid gets to do is we all get the count of 10 to make whatever noise you can make on, because otherwise you spend the whole entire class period saying, put that down, stop that, put that down, put that down, no, stop that,
oh,
put
yeah.
that down.
Well, absolutely. Experimentation is the most, is the key to success. And you let them, just let them go. I mean, the first time that I show them how to use the keyboards, they can just do whatever they want to do on the keyboards. They get to play all the weird sounds. They get to find the gunshot. They get to find the farting sound. They get all of that, all of those sounds, because you know what? That's what they want to do. They can't wait. They're so excited to make sound. You know, music is so exciting, and sounds are so exciting. Like you said, just let them whack it. Just let them, you know, and then you go up, of course, you talk about rules. I always begin the whole thing with rules at the beginning of the year. But, you know, once you go through the rules, then everything's cool. You know, you don't have, it works out great. I mean, but you start small, and it's simple as, I know the first, I can think of a really easy project that I do. When we do sounds, first time we do sounds on the keyboard, they have to make a story, and it's with 5 sentences. And use as many different sound effects as you can, and that's it. That's the whole project. five sentences. I mean, it's not something like, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end. We've got to have a climax. No, it can be as easy as the dog walked down the street, the dog barked. The dog walked up the street again and saw a man, and that's a story. I mean, and I think it's simple.
Right.
And the kids are real successful then. They're not having to come up with all of this, you know, extra stuff. And you're successful, you know. And it really pays off. Like, I'm sure with your boom actors, the same thing. I mean, how, when you first do it and the kids are experimenting, how many things do they have to experiment with? What do they have to do?
Well, usually we start with, okay, everyone just whack it however. And then after we've whacked it however, and, oh, the other thing I always do is we never, ever do anything. And this is, goes with new tech projects, too. We never, ever do anything where everybody gets the thing. So on day one, we get the boomwhackers out. I only, if there's 25 kids in the class, I only pull out 12 boomwhackers.
Right.
So that 12 kids are playing and 12 kids are watching. And then we switch. And now you have to practice watching again. Because eventually, and this, like I said, this goes for tech too, you're going to have to figure out from watching me or watching another person how to get something to work or how to make it play right or, you know, and this, and for me personally, this is something that I really stress with my kids, the whole process of becoming a better whatever it is, a better musician, a better technologist, whatever it is, looking critically at what you're doing and sitting back and thinking, now what could I have done to make that better or worse? So that's part of the process for me. Once the boomwhacker has left your hand, you better be watching somebody somewhere. I don't care if you're watching me to figure out about that rhythm that you couldn't quite get the first time, or if you're watching your buddy over there to see if he can hit it faster than you. I don't care what you're watching, but you better be mentally involved. You're not staring at the front of the room with no brain cells firing.
And you know what? I'm going to send you the link on that. There's a TED video all about that, and it shows people in India where they put up a computer, never showed them how to use it,
mm-hmm.
and there were kids watching, and they did a thing where the kids were watching, learned just as much as the kid that was doing.
Right.
I'll send you the link. You can put that up with the podcast.
Okay.
And it really is, I think it's very powerful, and I agree totally with you. Even though I have certain stations with the keyboards, everyone shares. I don't let kids sit by themselves because you learn so much, like you said, watching the other person, and so now you've got another teacher there.
Right.
I mean, it's and they watch each out for each other. And wait a minute, you're supposed to do this. No, you're supposed to do that. Instead of just whacking it, now you've got all 25, and you've got to teach all 25. If you have 12, you then guess what? You got 12 other people that are in the room saying, guess what? You're doing it wrong.
Right. Or, you did a really good job of that, you know.
Because yes,
sometimes you have kid who just really isn't getting it. Yes. But when he finally gets it, sometimes I don't see it because I've got 25 kids to watch. But that kid who's been assigned to be his partner does see it. And so now not only are we pulling together a community of learners that are learning music, but we're pulling together a community of people who are being supportive of each other's learning.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what happens in my class. I see kids jumping up all the time, getting excited. They can't wait to share that they actually got something right or something was really cool that happened. And there's someone there to share it. If everyone's doing the same thing, there's no, like you said, there's no time to share.
Right.
And I totally agree with you. I mean, I think we lose sight of that sometimes. We think that every kind of child has to be engaged, you know, 24/7. If they're not having something in their hands, then they're not doing something. I think watching and seeing how other people do it is just as important as doing it yourself.
Right.
But I'll send you the link on the TED thing, because the study showed that the kids that stood and watched
got just as
learned
much.
Just as yes,
fantastic.
100%.
I don't know, what was the very first techie project that you kind of did in your room? Do you even remember?
Well, the first techie project, first of all, my computers weren't there, so all I had was the, I had keyboards. I used to have just the old, I'm trying to think, way back when I had the old computers, you know, we did composition work. But with that, I only had them do 3 measures or 4 measures. I was very, very slow. You know, I, like I said, I didn't expect a lot. You know, I trying to get it all done in one sitting was sort of a thing. But, you know, I've gotten better over this idea of projects and allowing kids for extra time. You know, that's sort of a hard thing. I think that's one of the beginning teachers has a hard time with. They think, okay, 2 days, and if I do 3 days on it, the kids are going to get bored and stuff. And I think, you know,
right.
we have to sort of take a time. And another important thing is, don't have that the only project. You know, you got 30 minutes. I know you do this, Brenda. You always have two things going on. For 30 minutes, maybe the first time you do something. But after that, there's always two things going on in your class. Because then, if your tech project isn't working real well, you can always jump over to the other project.
Right.
The whole day isn't lost. So always my... I'm called the Plan B teacher. And sometimes it goes all the way to Plan G. But plan B. I mean, we always have a backup plan. You know, Plan B.
And I don't know about for you, but for me... My most reliable Plan B is my social bookmark list, whether that's on Digo or Delicious or whatever. That, for me, that is a great baby step, in my humble opinion, is to start one of those up, either Digo or Delicious, and start tagging things in broad categories for what you're using in your curriculum. Because that gives you a Plan B when the tech project goes awry and you're in the lab if you don't have a computer in your room. Or if you're in your room and your computer just won't do what you want it to, now you can pull up, you know, your Delicious links or your Digo links or however you're going to do that and type in whatever subject you're trying to teach that day. And hopefully you'll bring up a list of at least two or three other websites that you know are addressing that particular area, and you can go teach off of those instead of, you know, doing whatever you originally had planned. And that's another way, you know, if you show your kids how to get to that on your webpage, then when they're done with the project, they can go explore those other links on their own in your classroom, if you have, or in the lab, if you don't have multiple computers.
I totally agree that Plan B, my Plan B is my website. I have stuff up there, and they all know that the first day, that's all we do is talk about the website, how to navigate around it, how to comment. They have to comment so many times anyway. So it's nice to have that. And I have a lot of links up there like you have that are, you know, very music-centric or music and, you know, some type of learning aspect to it.
Right.
So, and they know they can only be one click off the website. So.
Ooh, that's an interesting rule.
Yeah. You know, and I have some kids that have made websites, and of course, they can click on a school website and click one off. But I don't want them going all over and surfing all over the place. Because my kids, you teach elementary mostly. My junior high kids, they'll be on Addicting Games before I can say hello.
Yeah, well, even my third graders, they will ask for Addicting Games. And I have noticed that some of my kids don't understand, like, what the stuff on the edges is advertising. They don't get that that's advertising. Like, what was I doing last week? I was sitting with a kid, and we were working on, he was supposed to be looking up stuff for our states. This was not music stuff. This was a different class. And on the side, there was one of those ads that, like, shook. You know what I mean? Like, it looks like it's going to explode if you don't click on it soon. And he completely got distracted, and he was clicking on it. I'm like, what are you doing? That has nothing to do with the state that you're looking up. Well, but it looks like you need to click on it or it's going to, you know, something's going to happen. And I said, yeah, that's an advertisement. I mean, apparently we haven't covered this enough with my third grade kids. Because in music class, I specify this square, you know, on the smart board, we go up there and we show them this square is the area that we're messing around in. We're going to ignore everything on the outside of that square because it's advertising and it's not going to be appropriate for what we're doing. But
I agree.
That's stuff for that. Someone's got to cover.
That's the thing we talked about over the podcast. We have to cover all of this, even though we think we have to do music 100%. We have to cover everything that comes along, but that's why we're educators. We see that as a teaching moment, and for that child, he will forever remember that moment you're sitting with him telling him about that is, you know, that's commercials, you know.
Right.
That's something you have to be part of, you know. So it's a teaching moment.
I think that it is.
You know.
So but I think, too... It's really important that you show those small steps that you're taking to your students. You can't just, you can't just put the web page up for your fourth graders, right, Carol, and expect that they know how to get to this really cool website.
No.
You have to, put it up on the projector and show them how you got there, and you have to show them the clicks 3 or 4 times because my little guys won't remember if they just see it once.
I totally agree, and that's why... you know, I have Left Brain Day and Right Brain Day, and we go through Left Brain. Everyone in the class has to be on the same page. And what that does is it makes them help everyone because they all want to move ahead. And if they see that station four isn't getting it, I get kids that are running over there and they'll click for the person. And so everyone sort of stays together. And then we go through everything together. And especially if it's a hard one, I do the lesson twice, both times. You know, they come in and they learn the lesson twice. So just to go over it. The second time is usually a little bit faster.
And see, something I picked up from you in one of our earlier conversations was the giving directions in small bits. I forget what you called that. But where you bring them to the middle of the room and say, you know, put it up on the overhead, the projector, and you do like four clicks, which is not enough to finish whatever task you were trying to get done, but four clicks is all they can remember in my class. So we do four clicks, they watch me do it, and then I go back to where I was, and then I say, okay, now you tell me how to do it, and then after they tell me how to do it, then we all race to our computer and do it ourselves, and then we all come sit back down as soon as that's done, and we go on and do the next thing the same exact way. I do it, you tell me how to do it, we race to our computers, we do it ourselves. Because that's the only way we get, because second graders can't remember a 10-step list. Now, if we do this little chunking thing enough times in the first semester, by the second semester, they can't remember a list of 10 things because the first five or six things are familiar to them. We've done it a bajillion times.
Right. I totally agree. Now, there's also, I do want to say this one little thing. I have to say this because I think it's important for the gifted and talented child. There are going to be some children in your classes that are going to zoom ahead, and I let them zoom. I mean, I let them go over there, and I say, you know what? You already know what's going on. You're working on some big project, and you can go do your own thing. You're not part of the class, and I let them fly. If they can fly, they don't have to sit here and do the stuff, but they have to sort of pass the muster with me.
Right.
So I do. My gifted and talented children do fly. We don't have to stay together. And some of them just go off and do their own thing. And the kids really understand that kid is flying because he knows what he's doing. You know, it's pretty evident on what he's working on. He's, you know, if he's part of the Vermont Media where he's coming to my class anyway, he's off doing his own thing.
Well, and then sometimes you also have a different set of expectations for that child.
Oh, yeah.
So you expect more at the end of the class period. They better not just have, the small thing that you guys are working on together. They better have something above and beyond that.
And on the flip side, they need to help other people out. If I see that they're sort of gotten a block, then they're walking around making sure everyone else is helping. You know, I think, you know, we're in a collaborative environment here where everyone has to help everyone out and help each other out and see how it all works as a unit. And that's what I love about teaching music is that we do understand that we are a family of community. We are a community that's trying to work together and work towards a common goal. And that's what I like about teaching music. Because it's centered in everything. We're a community first.
Right.
And then everything else sort of falls into place.
Right. Because you can't do the teaching without the classroom management being under control. But that's
another topic. And I think we're done with this. We'll put that down as one of our classroom management.
Sounds good. All right. We're going to wrap this one up. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you would like more information on any of the topics we discussed, all the links are on the blog.